From our studios in downtown Washington, D.C., it's D.C. Public Safety. I'm your host, Leonard Sipes. The program today is the Cincinnati Initiative to Reduce Violence. And one of the things that we have in yet another of the series for the National Criminal Justice Association and focusing on exemplary programs is a program within Cincinnati, Ohio, that's produced a 55% reduction in group member-involved homicides over an eight-month period. And I think what we're doing there is talking about gangs. We have three principals with us on the show today. We have Carlton Moore, the Executive Director of the Ohio Office of Criminal Justice Services, Dr. Robin Engel, the Director of the University of Cincinnati Policing Institute, and we have Greg Baker. Greg is the Executive Director of Community Relations for the Cincinnati Police Department. And to Carlton and to Greg and to Robin, welcome to DC Public Safety.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, Greg Baker, you're going to start. Give me a sense as to what the Cincinnati Initiative to Reduce Violence is all about.
Okay, Leonard. The Cincinnati Initiative to Reduce Violence goes by the acronym of SERVE, and it's a multi-agency collaboration that we began back in April of 2007, and it's designed to reduce gun-related homicides and associated violence with sustained reductions over time. Our focused deterrence strategy is loosely modeled after the Boston Gun Project, which began in the mid-1990s.
And was very successful for a good amount of time.
And it was, and that's why we emphasize the sustained reductions over time. That's one of the problems with the Boston Project is that it began to lose its effectiveness after a period of time, and we don't want to model that part of the initiative as well.
And as somebody who has spent somebody who has spent 10 years in community crime prevention earlier in my career, that was a common finding of community crime prevention programs was that whole sense of deterioration over time. But continue, please.
Well, our partnership involves multiple law enforcement agencies, which is pretty much mirrored after the Boston Project. But where we took some liberties with the model in Cincinnati, we included a social service component as well as a community component. And we use those two components to deliver a clear message to violent street groups that the violence must stop.
Okay. And the whole concept here is to, what, target specific offenders within a particular area, to target specific offenders in terms of their crime backgrounds?
Well, as you may recall, back in 2001, the Cincinnati Police Department was subject to a Department of Justice memorandum of agreement, as well as a settlement to a racial profiling lawsuit, which culminated in a collaborative agreement. And in both of those documents, the department was committed to utilize problem solving as its chief strategy in reducing issues of crime and disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So SERVE is actually built on a problem-solving model. And back in 2000, well, when we began the initiative, we looked at homicides that occurred chiefly during the period of 2006 and determined from that about 75% of those homicides involved either as a victim or the perpetrator, an individual that was participating in a group of individuals that were conspiring to commit violence or otherwise known as a gang.
Right.
So as we looked at that commonality, we developed a strategy that would impact those individuals.
Okay, but what we're talking about is gang members. So that's the operative concept here.
Gang members, not necessarily in the former sense of the word, though we do have some gangs operating in Cincinnati and just recently had an enforcement action against a group that probably would meet the formal definition of a gang. However, we actually kind of lowered the definition somewhat to include any individuals that operate in a group that conspire to commit crime.
Understood. Robin, you're trying to come in?
Well, I was just going to say that one of the things we realized pretty quickly in Cincinnati was that our offenders are really loosely knit, loosely organized in these types of violent groups. And so you might have a very organized gang. In fact, one of our most recent gang crackdowns, there were 96 known members of that very structured, organized gang.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have individuals, 3, 4, 5 individuals that hang out together, they commit crimes together, they engage in violence together. And so the beauty of this initiative is that it spans across these different types of gangs, groups, cliques, sets, whatever you'd like to call them. But the idea is that it's based on a handful of very active chronic offenders commit the majority of violence in our city.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, we've been able to demonstrate that empirically as well.
And that's a common finding throughout the country. We go back to the RAND research back in the 1980s, where they said that a minority of offenders commit the majority of crime. So I think what you're doing is targeting high-rate violent offenders. Is that it?
Yes, that's exactly what we're looking at. But here we believe that the violence that they're involved in, we can impact that violence through group pressure and support, pressure through the police department, support through our social services in our community, and that if we have a sustained communication with these offenders and with the streets, we can ultimately reduce that violence over time.
I'm going to read a little bit more from the message that I have in front of me. The anti-violence message is powerfully communicated through a number of different mechanisms, including call-in sessions with probationers, parolees, direct contact with street workers, advocates, police, parole, and probation, and community outreach. The core enforcement step is to tax groups for violence through any convenient legal means, such as drug enforcement, and create conditions within the group that members will control each other's violent behavior. So the whole idea is to reach out to the group structure in terms of enforcement and in terms of programs that can help them, yet at the same time delivering the message that the violence must stop. And that they are going to be held responsible for each other's behavior in one way, shape, or another.
Yeah, and part of our message is we actually set the bar at homicides. So not much so much the drug enforcement, but we communicate to those individuals that the in very clear terms that the next body that falls, not only will the shooter be aggressively pursued, but each member of the group that he hangs with.
Right, because it's just not the shooter. The shooter is with a network of individuals who sell the gun, rent the gun, hide the gun, provide transportation, know of the actions beforehand, and so they all, in one way, shape, or form, are involved in some sort of criminal conspiracy, right or wrong?
Yes and no. I think part of it really is about that peer pressure that the influence that they have over other members of the group. And that's really what we're trying to tap into here. A lot of the violence that we see is really not associated with drug business per se, but it's about disrespect. It's about norms and narratives of the street, what it means to be a man, and how you respond to acts of disrespect. And so if we can tax these groups in the sense that, hey, if their buddy's going to go out and shoot someone, and then they know that law enforcement is going to come down on them too, then they're more likely to say, hey, don't put the gun down. Come on. Don't bring
really
attention to us.
It's really an approach that, you know, that society operates in general, that we try to get those individuals to police themselves.
And I think that that's a powerful message. And most of what we're discussing here, I would suggest, applies to other cities throughout the country as well. Within the city of Washington, D.C., that loosely structured group of individuals that we refer to as crews, and Baltimore has exactly the same problem. I find that, when we talk about gangs or talk about organized criminal conspiracies, it's not as stereotypical as most people think. And in some cases, I think, as Robin Engel just pointed out, that they're pretty much loose groups of individuals who do crimes together. Am I right?
That's exactly the case. That's exactly the case, and that's why we focus on those individuals that, loose-knit, low-lying crimes that often have some dramatic effects.
Right. And as Mr. Baker said before, 75%, three-quarters of the homicides in our city that we looked at were group member involved. Either the victim or the suspect or the circumstances indicated to us that the violence was associated with these gangs or groups. So three-quarters of our homicides are based on this very small group of individuals at the street level, and we know their names.
And with a 55% reduction in group member involved homicides over an 8-month period, obviously you were able to successfully get involved with these individuals and convince them that this is something that they should not do.
Well, it's an ongoing process. Our numbers have changed. We're looking now at 15 months out, 15 months pre and post, and we're about a 40% reduction in group member involved homicides at this point.
That's a huge reduction.
It is. It's an ever-evolving and changing strategy, though. And what we also realize is that there's constant change of the groups on the streets and the need for continual intelligence and updates, and really just to find out what's happening on the streets. It's a continual process, and it's a lot of work, a lot of moving parts on this project. And we've been very fortunate to have the support from the Ohio Office of Criminal Justice Services. Director Moore has been very instrumental, not only in our city, but also bringing this strategy to other cities in Ohio.
And Carlton, that's the that's where it goes over to you. You were able to provide Department of Justice money. I know it's JAG funded in terms of those of us within the criminal justice system, but basically it's U.S. Department of Justice seed money to get this thing up and running, correct?
Well, we were able to provide some funding to the city, mainly to the university, so they could provide services. They have some technical services that are a big part of this initiative. Most of the money for this in the city of Cincinnati, though, those were city of Cincinnati resources that were put into this.
Okay.
We have a larger project where we're trying to take the success that Cincinnati has seen and spread that throughout the entire state. And that's where we've made more of a state investment.
And
those with Department of Justice JAG funding.
Right. And I guess the only point that I'm trying to make is that the more federal funding we have for these innovative projects, the more we can do in terms of this sort of what seems to be an exemplary program in terms of the 40% reduction over what period of time again, Robin? A 14-month period, did you say?
15 months pre and post.
And that's pretty daggone good, considering the homicide problems that we have throughout the country.
Exactly. As far as impacting that targeted group of active offenders, we're making some substantial reductions.
What are the takeaways? Go ahead, please, Robin.
We're also seeing record numbers of folks actually signing up for services as well. And I was one of the first. I was a naysayer. I didn't believe the individuals that were so heavily involved in the criminal element and violent lifestyle would be willing to take an opportunity to get out of that lifestyle. And I've been proven wrong here in the city, actually to the delight of my team and to city residents and everyone else in the city. We have found that now, you know, over 300 would-be violent offenders have made that call to our social services team, and we've been able to provide job readiness training, getting lots of folks through that, and providing opportunities for jobs and second chances for these individuals. And I'm really thrilled at that as an outcome as well.
That's one of the beauties of the program, is that in addition to reducing our homicides, you know, among this group of offenders, we also are able to improve police-community relations. And by using the HOPE arm, which resonates very soundly within the community, the police department, along with the collaboration of other agencies, are able to extend itself in not just the traditional law enforcement means, but also actually able to provide individuals with alternatives to the lifestyles that they have committed themselves to.
And whenever I do these radio shows, what I do is look for the takeaways that other agencies can use throughout the country. And considering the fact that 20% of our listeners and viewers to the program are not in the United States, just spread out all over the world, to offer everybody an opportunity to learn what are the takeaways, what are the key issues, because there's a lot of things here. I mean, the Boston Gun Project in the mid-1990s did deteriorate to a large degree. It was extremely successful, but it's that deterioration. I would imagine it takes a lot of effort and a lot of, breaking down the bureaucratic barriers for the University of Cincinnati to come together with the police department, to come together with the Ohio Office of Criminal Justice Services, to come together with community groups, and to offer what is basically a multifaceted program, a clear message to those people who are involved in violence, enforcement action, targeted enforcement actions if necessary, but at the same time, social services for those people who want to escape a life of violence. And I would imagine community outreach at a fairly significant degree. I mean, that's a lot of different moving parts to throw
well,
into
you
one.
You hit on a number of the moving parts, but one that you omitted is in the police community relations arena. We're able to, as Robin defined it, we actually know we have somewhere over 1,000 identified group members in Cincinnati. And we know them by name and address, control number, et cetera. When we actually have to move into an enforcement mode, we're able to strategically go after those individuals, which is somewhat of a change from the traditional approach where you have saturation and suppression within a neighborhood. The traditional approach is that if there is some type of high level of criminal activity going on in one specific geographic area, the normal mode is to saturate that area with police officers, set out the net. And then what happens is, and particularly in the African-American community, a lot of individuals get caught up in that net that aren't really any violent offenders. And mm-hmm. that's very abrasive against the community. Mm-hmm. You know, therefore, you start getting into this racial profiling, a lot of other things that are really have an adverse impact. Whereas with this initiative, we're able to just strategically go in after specific individuals, extract them from the community, and leave the community intact.
One of the most powerful messages I ever heard is when our people were working, and I represent a federal parole and probation agency in Washington, D.C., and our people are working with the U.S. Marshal's Office and the Metropolitan Police Department, and we're in a community, and we're serving warrants, and a woman who was powerful in the community came out while everybody was there, and in essence said, take the ones who are causing us the most problems, but help the ones who really do want to be helped. And I think that is the essence of so much of what we're doing today, is to target individuals, not communities, and to help the ones who do want to escape a life of violence.
Leonard, getting back to your point about the significant number of moving parts, David Kennedy, who's formerly at Harvard and now at John Jay mm-hmm. College in New York, has been really instrumental in helping our team as a consultant. He was involved in the Boston Project and has subsequently worked in lots of different agencies and communities around the world, actually.
Yeah, and Baltimore when I was there. Go ahead, please.
Right. Well, one of the things that he said to me that I thought was so profound was, we know how to control the bad guys. It's the good guys we have trouble with. And what he meant by that, of course, is that we know what works and we know what we need to do to make it work. The problem is sustainability. The problem is the moving parts, getting everyone to operate on one page and speak in one voice.
Yep.
And why I think CERV is very unique is that we have been fortunate enough to have some executives from Procter & Gamble that have volunteered their time to help us set up an organizational structure to help coordinate that team. And we talk about corporate principles of objectives, goals, strategies, and measures. We have a systematic data collection approach, a comprehensive services plan, and most importantly, we have executive-level involvement and leadership from our city, from our political leaders, our mayor, our city manager, and council members as well, our police chief. We have a high-level commitment to the long term here in Cincinnati, and I think that's going to help us push through.
Robin, I think that is exemplary, but that is the bottom line question is, can you sustain it? Now, you just told me that you're in it for the long run, but what is the long run? Is it a matter of months? Is it a matter of years? Is it a matter of the next decade? Because, again, all of that requires a lot of energy. All that requires a lot of money.
Well, one of the things that we've said here in Cincinnati is that Cincinnati has a new way of doing business. This is literally a change in philosophy. It's not a program. It's a new way of doing business here in the city. And so as the leadership changes, as people come in and out, we believe we've set up a structure that will accommodate those changes over time. And I know also that the Cincinnati Police Department has said, if CERV goes away tomorrow, Lieutenant Colonel Whalen always says this, if CERV were to go away tomorrow, we would still police in this fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes sense to target groups and to think about our law enforcement strategies in terms of groups.
Well, just for a second, Greg.
Comes from our chief of police is that we cannot arrest our way out of this problem. And what he means by that, particularly in this climate of dwindling resources, is that arrest is not always the best and the only option. So we have to look at how can we be proactive in trying to prevent some crimes from occurring. And that talks about the help and the hope component, where we get individuals that normally would participate in these groups without any other avenues for supporting themselves and then putting them in some gainful employment.
Well, we'll be on our halfway point in the show where I ordinarily reintroduce the guest, Carlton Moore, the Executive Director of the Ohio Office of Criminal Justice Services, Dr. Robin Engel, Director of the University of Cincinnati Policing Institute, which to those people not involved in the criminal justice system is well known as one of the really great research institutions in terms of crime and justice issues. And we have Greg Baker, the Executive Director of Community Relations for the Cincinnati Police Department. For those people interested in learning more about the information, go to the show notes in the program, and I'll provide Greg Baker's email address. It's Greg Baker, Greg, G-R-E-G dot B-A-K-E-R at Cincinnati-Ohio.gov. And I'll repeat that one more time at the end of the program, and it'll be in the show notes. And Robin, I guess that's the issue of sustainability, because this concept is not unique to Cincinnati. Cities have tried this concept to one degree or another, and found it difficult to maintain.
Absolutely. You know, we've seen successes across the country, but we've also seen those successes dwindle over time. And there, you know, there could be two things going on here. It could be that the focused deterrence approach is just simply a short-term, it has short-term outcomes. That could be one of the possibilities. But more likely, and what we've seen, I think, from some of the other cities, is that the breakdown becomes the teams stop doing the work. They get away from what worked for a whole host of reasons, political reasons, changes in personnel, whatever it may be. And they just literally stopped doing what worked. And so that's what we've been able to guard against here. We believe we put in a structure in place that will make sense for us long term. But addressing the first possibility, that this is really just it has a short-term impact, that's why we've embedded heavily into the services area as well, into the community components of this, so that ultimately we can turn this over to the communities and help them police themselves.
All of you have suggested, in essence, that this is a different way of policing. And I think that is probably the most exciting part of this concept. It's a different way of doing things. It's a different way of conducting business. Greg, I think you really made that a strong point, that the concept is that we within the criminal justice system, if we're really going to have a sustained impact on violence, have got to do things differently, have got to join together with the community, and we just cannot march in like a paramilitary force and conduct our business. It's got to be done with the community. And the community wants the bad guys out, but the people who are marginal and who are trying to make it, they want the system to try to assist them.
And, you know, of course, the community organizing is probably the most important element, but likewise, it's probably the most difficult to actually achieve. So to that, on that note, what we're doing is working with some community organizations to really target on those 1,000 individuals that we have identified as being the most violent offenders, and then identifying who within the community or what individuals would have influence over them or their this kind of community. Informal community leaders, are there elders, members of the faith-based community, you know, grandparents, uncles, whoever it is that may have some influence, and then helping those individuals carry our message that the violence must stop. And then we're working to really provide them the words to say, and as well as different printed medium so that they can actually assist us in providing the, or resonating our stop the violence message, and then providing those individuals with the connections that they need to get out of that lifestyle.
Is the message here that the community needs to basically manage its own problems, that we in criminal justice are obligated to get in there and help them, but we in the final analysis have a very limited impact, that it's really the community coming together, coalescing, and controlling itself? Am I right or am I wrong?
You're absolutely right. It's kind of rolling things back to the 1960s, where my mother would go out on the porch, and if someone was throwing a bottle in the grass broke in front of the house, that she'd go and chastise that individual and get them to pick up the glass. We don't have that type of community control anymore. Everyone is operating in a state of fear. But what we want to do is empower those community members and let them know that they are in the majority, and that it's just a small group of individuals that are perpetuating and perpetrating these crimes that we want to target and go after.
And I might add that I don't really think that it's just a community issue and that we turn it back over to the communities per se, but rather a partnership with law enforcement. One of the most powerful things that I've seen is at these call-in sessions where we bring in folks that are on probation and parole that we believe are involved in violence or likely to be involved in violence, and to see the community stand together with the police department, with law enforcement, with the street workers and the outreach, all, again, in one voice, speaking together. It's a very powerful message that's being sent. And if I could also add, one of the things that I love about this initiative and the assistance that we've been receiving from the Office of Criminal Justice Services is that we can now, there are other communities in Ohio that are doing similar work, and we can compare notes together, and we talk about what's working in other places, and we learn from one another as we're moving through the strategy. Now, Cincinnati's been held up right now as the model, but the truth is we have a lot to learn, and as we're, you know, hitting little bumps in the roads, we're learning from the other cities in Ohio and around the world that are doing these strategies as well.
And that's so important as we look at being able to sustain these results. There's a lot of ways to approach this. Probably one of the reasons that some of these other cities were not able to maintain those results is that you have to keep that message fresh. The traditional approach is that we have used a courtroom and we call individuals in and we actually go through a formal presentation of those individuals and communicating this message from the law enforcement as well as the services and the community component that these things have to cease to exist. What we're looking at now is looking at different ways to communicate that same message. Possibly going into prisons, having volunteer call-in sessions, having sessions right in the community itself to call these individuals in and to provide them this information.
Because in essence, it's the community
On Robin's point, I think, and this goes to sustainability, I think the fact that we have multiple cities around the state, we don't have a situation where a city feels like we're in this on our own. It's a what we've tried to do is take the success of Cincinnati and use that as a model for other cities around the state. And we have a fair number of cities around the state who are at different stages of implementing the model that Cincinnati has already implemented, and to allow them to share ideas, share experiences, share knowledge. And there's a sense of, there's almost like a synergy there that we're all responsible to each other. And so maybe in some of those instances where you had individuals in a city who just decided for one reason or another that they weren't going to continue the work, to do the work that allowed them to get the results that they were getting, I don't think we'll see that here. First of all, they've gone into it with the idea and the understanding that sustainability has been an issue from the very beginning. And as a funder, that's one of the things that we really focus on. Programs are short-term, but they went into this with the idea of saying, hey, we're going to make this long-term, and we're going to build the sustainability into the program. And that was very attractive to me as a funder. And then I think what I talked about before about this kind of we're all in this together, I think will help make sure that that it won't just be someone decides one day we're not going to do it and everything falls down like a house of cards, but that this is going to be the way that law enforcement throughout Ohio in those cities who decide to implement this program, the way that they're going to do business.
And Carlton, you've got the final word. Ladies and gentlemen, we've been talking about the Cincinnati Initiative to Reduce Violence. What do we have? A 40% reduction in group-related homicides over a 15-month period. 300 individuals receiving social services who are trying to get out of this whole issue of a continuing cycle of violence. We've been talking today to three individuals, Carlton Moore, the Executive Director of the Ohio Office of Criminal Justice Services, Dr. Robin Engel, Director of the University of Cincinnati Policing Institute, and Greg Baker, who is the Executive Director of Community Relations for the Cincinnati Police Department. I'm going to give Greg's email address as the contact point, Greg, G-R-E-G dot B-A-K-E-R at Cincinnati-Ohio.org. DCPublicSafety.oh.gov. Ladies and gentlemen, this is DC Public Safety. We are averaging about 120,000 requests at the moment for the radio and television and blog and transcript the part of our social media service. We really appreciate all of your suggestions. We read every suggestion. We incorporate many of them into the shows. We use your idea in terms of new show topics. So please keep them coming in. Everybody, have yourselves a very, very pleasant day.